Hello, World Changers. This is Rethinking Africa with Nondyebo Lokumede, a podcast series where I'll be interviewing young African youth who are doing remarkable things across the African continent. I'll be capturing authentic African stories and, of course, engaging on important discussions relating to the development of the African continent. So stay tuned, engage, and remember, Africa, your time is now. So today is my first episode. It's an episode on what it means to be African. I am going to be interviewing a young man. His name is Olushola. He's from Nigeria, Abuja, from Nigeria. And this is a young traveler. He is also a male women's rights activist. I think that is so cool for me. You know, the first conversation that I had, or the first few conversations that I had with him, finding out that he's a male women's rights activist. That's amazing, especially looking at, you know, the challenges that we currently have in South Africa with the cases of gender-based violence. So I believe that it's critical for men to understand that they need to be part of the conversation of change in order to empower women, but also to protect women. So well done to you for that. I am going to call you now. So I want a customized Travel for Change Adventures cup. Hopefully the next session. Hey!
Can you see me?
Yes, I can see you.
Okay.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
I'm sorry about the situation that happened on Facebook. Yeah, that was unfortunate. Hello? Okay, you're back now.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. How's your day? How's this year been like for you? The past few months of, you know, the pandemic? How have you been holding
out? Yeah, COVID restarted everything. COVID restarted life. So it's like a whole new, you know, awakening to everything, basically. Just made life really, really different. So.
Yeah. But like, how has the work situation been? I know a lot of people have had working at home.
Yeah, people lost their jobs. True. So it's more like we've been plugged into the remote lifestyle, and going forward, this is like the new way of living and the new way of working and stuff. So it's really interesting, to be honest.
That's very true. So in the past few months, I've been part of a group of researchers who are currently researching on the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. And you obviously we are within the situation, so we've had to adjust in so many different ways, but really going into researching the different dynamics that have been currently occurring in terms of adjusting to life personally, mental health, you know, the biggest thing, education, because that is what we're currently focusing on. You can tell that a lot has had to change. Really unfortunate. But I think we kind of just have to live with the new normal and take life as it goes.
True.
Yeah. So could you just tell us a bit about yourself? I'm good. It's been a while. Hello, Sonia. Hello to everyone who just joined us. So for those who just joined us again, we were supposed to have the session on Facebook. So I'm going to have these sessions on different places just to see where I get the most interaction. I did say that I have a better following on Facebook than I do on Instagram. But at times I have tried to have my live sessions on Facebook. And whenever I try to invite the people that I'm going to be speaking to, I've had challenges. So Instagram has kind of worked. So that's why we're on Instagram. But it doesn't matter. We're still going to have the same conversations. And you guys are more than welcome to, comment there. If you have any comments or a question that you might want to ask him or myself, you're more than welcome to ask. Yes. So go ahead. Please introduce yourself. Just something interesting about yourself that you think people don't know. Yeah, anything interesting about yourself? Okay, we seem to be having a connection problem. Hello, are you there? Okay, he left. I think he might have network problems. I'll try to call him again. Hey, Brima, how are you? How are you doing? So I met Brima just randomly, as in just a random conversation now, because I'm still waiting for Olusholam. I met Brima in no, sorry, in Malaysia. And he's joined one of our sessions, one of our webinars, the one we were discussing social inequalities that exist in education systems in Africa. But he's such a dope guy. He's currently based in Turkey, which is, I'm glad you're good. And Turkey, which is, one of those countries that I've always been fascinated by. Can I call you actually? While I wait for Olushola. I love that he's a women's rights activist. Power to you. Like what you said.
Hello, I hear you.
Hey, Ibrima. Sorry, I'm just reading this comment quickly. Like you said, Nonji, it is really important for men to be involved and not just part of the conversation. I completely agree. How are you? It's so dark, though. Why are you so
Fine,
dark?
thank you. Yeah, it's kind of dark. I'm outside. It's night here in Turkey.
Okay. What time is it?
It's after 8, like we have some minutes to 9.
Yeah. Okay.
How are you doing? How have you been?
I've been okay. Hey, I've been okay. Like I've been thinking about whether or not to, join you guys in Turkey, but it's just, I don't know. There's just a lot happening in the world right now to be traveling so soon.
Exactly. Actually, even me, I'm not quite sure if I'm going to be there because I have my own issue, and then the program is gonna be around October, and then maybe that time I'll be having my midterm exams, something like that. So I don't know, but it's going to be a great program. If you can come, surely it'll be good.
I'll let you know. If I do come, obviously I need to see you, even if you don't come to the conference.
Okay, no problem.
I found something
Tell me
really
about
interesting.
you.
Sorry?
No, continue.
No, before you go, actually, I found out something really interesting about Turkey. The thing that they say Turkey is part of two continents.
Yeah.
Just explain that before you go.
It's part of two continents. It's part of Europe and Asia, but like most of the countries is like only 2 to 3% is part of the European side, and then you have a city that Istanbul is part of Europe and then Asia at the same time.
Yeah.
There's the Bosphorus that is separating the two continents. It's a very beautiful city. If you come, you will really appreciate it, I'm quite sure. Like, you
Yeah.
people should really visit Turkey. It's a great place. So, expecting you all to come.
Okay, hopefully. I have my fingers crossed. But thank you so much for joining.
Okay.
I know it's so random,
Okay,
but
no problem.
you joined anyways. Thank you. Cool. Bye.
You're welcome to.
Okay, let me try again. So this is my biggest fear when it comes to like live TV or just anything live, is that you can't
I
anticipate.
am strong.
Okay, I can see
Can you see
you.
me?
Yeah, I can see
Hey.
you. Yeah. I think, the most annoying thing about live sessions is that you really can't anticipate things like network failures and et cetera, et cetera. But it's fine. You were still saying, you were still telling
Yeah.
us about sharing about that interesting thing that you think we should know about you.
So yes, I work as a gender-based activist. So we actually work in accordance to ensure that women feel safe and they also empower themselves to get themselves to the next level. Because we realize that we need more, male voice, presence. Because we have fathers that have daughters, we have fathers that have wives, we have fathers that, you have a male child in every home in most cases, and they also have sisters. They also have, a mother figure. They also have colleagues and stuff. But when it comes to standing up against, gender-based violence, people are always quiet. So we need more people to speak out against things like this that, tends to actually become a problem in the society. You wake up every day with, rape cases and death cases of women that you knew from, your street or people you knew from school, and all of a
Yeah.
sudden, they were attacked or they were molested and nothing is being done. It's really sad that we are in a society that, some men, tend to be predators, and the same men just choose to fold their hands and keep quiet. So, yes, I'm part of the organization that we actually stands against such, and we try to empower more women in governance, and we try to ensure that, we still have, they call them the he for she, the guys who stand for the ladies in places of, and in things like this. Yes.
That is so impressive. I'd actually like to know, for us South Africans, August is Women's Month. So that's why I had decided I want to bring young women around the world to have conversations around women in leadership. And from that overall theme, us then discussing certain topics that re relate to the challenges that women face. But I'd like to know, as someone who is in that industry, what are the rates of, maybe not so much statistics, but do you guys have a lot of cases of violence? And if so, how has your government or municipalities, how have they tried to create spaces where women can be protected?
Yeah, so it's a constant work. We're trying to ensure that we get to the top. It's not easy because I think patriarchy has a huge, influence in our culture. And whenever you try to, try and bring a woman that has all the necessary qualities that could lead, they really actually shut her down with culture, with the norm that, oh, what is she supposed to be doing here? She's meant to be in the other room, or she's meant to be in the kitchen. So it really leaves, a lot of, sadness in the thought of it when you think that a woman that has the potentials and has the qualities to actually, take opportunity and lead will never be given the opportunity. And in Nigeria, it's really, really sad. With this government, it has not been easy at all. the administration has a decline of basically like below 9% of women in power, in any from, you know, Senate to commissioners to local government chairman. We have just below, you know, 9%. So it's really, really disheartening, to be honest.
Yeah. But I do think that it's a wave that probably goes around the whole continent. Maybe it comes from a culture of patriarchy. Maybe it also comes from a lack of, you know, people's inability to adjust with time. Because I know that in many cases, patriarchy is linked to a lot of cultural dynamics. But I do hope that, I mean, we can only hope and do what we can in terms of raising awareness about not only the empowerment of women, but, you know, just anti-gender-based violence conversations. Yeah, but with men like you, I believe that the future is bright.
It definitely Amen. Is. The future is most definitely bright. And I just want to ensure that, like, more men stand in place to make this change. Because it's not, you know, you need not just one person, you need a collection of people to make a huge impact in the society. And if we just, you know, because the funny thing is that when you look at it, we have mothers that trained all these men, and we have sisters that literally took care of all these men. But when it's time to put them in places that could actually make a remarkable transformation, they tend to sideline them. And this shouldn't be the story, and this shouldn't be the case. Because if you know someone has the ability, gender should not be a cause or a reason to, you know, make it difficult for that person to get that position or get that. He opens That's your very eyes true. To a lot of things.
That is very true. Last year I was part of a project. I was working on a project with other, you know, awesome young people in Nigeria, part of a fellowship program. And we were working on a solution towards the gender-based violence problem. But, you know, our focus was about raising awareness. Working towards raising more awareness than, you know, trying to solve the problem when it has already occurred. And I think it's so important that perhaps it's a thing of these discussions need to go back to, you know,
the roots.
To the age
we need
where
to go back to the roots.
We need to go back to the roots.
Yeah.
We really do. But I think it's also a thing of, let's start these conversations earlier on. Between both men between both boys and girls, so that they understand those dynamics from a very young age. And we're not just talking to young people in their late 20s or old people in their late 40s, but it has to start at a very fundamental, on a very fundamental level. Okay, sorry, let me just read this comment. Patriarchy hides in the trenches of culture. The true liberation of women starts with the critical interrogation of culture. That is the holy cow. Thank you so much for that. That is very true. But
very true.
How do we move with time? So how does culture evolve with us not losing the very essence of culture?
The main point of this is not losing culture is taking it back to our education and taking it back to our households, because every family unit literally trains a boy child and a girl child. So once we actually tackle the family unit and give a better orientation, we can take that to now the schools. We can now, you know, change our, you know, curriculums, change our textbooks, change our lesson notes. That gives the whole perception that, oh, a woman is only left to get married and to only just be the wife, and she should not, you know, attempt to achieve any other thing beyond being a wife. You know, to tell her that, oh, she could actually achieve all this and more if she puts her heart to it and if she puts her zeal to it. So everything matters from the home and as well our educational system to begin with.
That's true. Representation is always such a huge topic. We see representation even in the beauty industry, where for the longest time that you have not seen black, you know, the face of black women being represented as the idea of what a beautiful woman is. But I think even in gender-based violence, maybe the representation of power needs to be transformed. And I'll say this because, I'll say this because a lot of the times where when I do have conversations with young people, especially this is now relating to development work or leadership, before people get to know who the person is behind the organization, they always think that I'm a man. And it might seem like such a random thing, but when I think about it, it's like, but there's always that idea that if someone is leading something that is relatively successful or is in a position, some kind of position, that it has to be a man.
Well, that's true. That's how, you know, it has eaten deep into our society, because in most cases, they believe for it to get to this certain level, you know, a man has put it up in the structure and the foundation, and he has given it a pillar. And maybe a woman was just there to sit upon it. So it's like as if, oh, they married her into this, you know, line of wealth, you know, that she wasn't from the start. But in the truth of it, in the reality of it, is that most women were actually even the initiators of all this. You see people, mothers, and you see people that, you know, their father had an idea and their mother helped to raise the funding or helped in the establishment. But at the end of the day, it goes back to the husband and they give all the glory back to the man, which shouldn't be. It should be like they both made it work. But that's something that if we equally try to transform it, it's possible, really possible.
That is so true. That is so true. Okay. Something you might not know about me. I was in ministry for some time. This was between, I would say, 2015 and 2018. So I was in the process of, you know, evangelical training. So I had a lot of interesting experiences, even where patriarchy is concerned in the church. And I know that's quite controversial. You know, people don't want to speak about patriarchy and the church, but I believe that it really exists. In fact, I would even have conversations with a young lady who was a close friend of mine at the time. We would have conversations and say, you know, I wish at that point we wish that we had husbands, because for us, because of things that we were dealing with, we thought to ourselves that the only way that these men would take us seriously or take our calling seriously is if we had a powerful male figure right next to us. So it really goes into so many other elements. It goes into culture, but it also goes into faith. But we don't want to speak about the faith thing, because then it's like, woo. Yeah. But I do think that we need to be comfortable with sharing the truth, no matter how uncomfortable the truth is. Because just because we're comfortable with a certain environment, it does not make it right. Yeah. But thank you so much for sharing for sharing your view on just gender-based violence, which is the work that Olushola does. But the whole idea behind this particular session was for us to speak about what it means to be African. But we've kind of just gone off a tangent, which is not a problem though, because it's a good conversation to discuss or to go into rather. But I wanted to I looked for a few definitions on what it means to be African, or rather just African. And I'm just going to read them out. So one of the definitions of African: as a person from Africa, especially a black person, okay, or anything from or pertaining to the continent of Africa, right? But I think my personal definition of what it means to be African, being African for me is a sense of community. It's a sense of rootedness. But whenever I think of Africanness, I think about strength and just a continent and a people that is filled with so much potential. But what does it mean for you?
Okay, we start with what does it mean to be Nigerian? So For me to be Nigerian is a whole lot, then to be African, I think, is just empowering. The fact that you are African is the fact that you know that you are diverse, you're strong, you're powerful, and you're resilient. You've passed through a lot to become, this diamond. You are a rock, and literally, you financed yourself to become a diamond. And because of we know where we are beyond slavery, I think because Africa is rooted a lot with slavery, and we try to make that like our storyline. And beyond slavery, we have, history of culture, of education, of leadership, of power, of, we will have kingdoms and, thrones and a huge, ecosystem that has been thriving even before the Western world came into play. So it really opens your eye to the reality of life that Africa has been and will always be, the first in mankind to start a whole lot that we have to today, like history and culture, and even our technologies could be rooted back to Africa. Even the said our Lord Jesus Christ was born in Africa. So Africa is home to me. You cannot dispute because we have it so much. We have so much. The culture, the languages, the fashion, the food, So it's a whole lot to be African. So yes, it's a beautiful journey. I don't think anyone can ever say, "Oh, I'm never glad to be African." I just feel that everyone is always super excited. Where are you from? But the idea that they think everyone is African and not forgetting that Africa is a continent with different cultures and different countries is one thing we need to actually change. But yes, it's fantastic to me. Yeah, I'm an African man.
I
Yes,
completely
I'm from
completely.
Nigeria, and I hold my country here, and I know my Africans as well. That's all.
I
That's
think
all.
also it just makes me think about the co conversation around the single story that, some people think that being African is just, we have shared identities and everything about us is the same. But I think it's such a huge misconception.
True.
That's why for me it's been so important to also just go into the You're back. Okay, you're back. Well, that's why for me it's been so important to go into this journey of just correcting misconceptions that exist about Africa, because there's so much about Africa out there that is just so wrong. So I think it's our responsibility to kind of make the efforts to correct those misconceptions and to rewrite our own stories. But you
Yes.
spoke about,
So,
go ahead.
no, I'm just saying that basically we need to change the narrative of how they see Africans, and we need to change the narrative of how we are, projected. Because a lot of the time they naturally make us like a donation, a charity case, like, oh, where you go? Oh, you're from Africa. Oh, you're poor. Oh, things are not working. Oh, you're from the bush. Oh, you're from the village. They always give us that mentality or that view, like, okay, they don't see things. They have not seen, progress, so we have not seen this kind of life and this kind of, and
I
all this
completely agree.
transformation. So the fact that we can change that is important. It's important to change how we are projected or seen to the public. We need to change that narrative. Africans need to change the narrative, and not other people who have come to Africa to give a different view about Africans.
That's true. Ownership is so important. Ownership. Our stories, ownership of our stories, actually going into that. I know that you are like a bubbly person, also into like the creative industry. And one thing that I always ask myself, or conversation that I like getting into with my family is speaking about, comparisons between South African culture and Nigerian culture. And, not to say anything negative about my personal culture, but one thing that I've really drawn from the Nigerian culture, because I have a lot of friends from Nigeria and I've worked with a lot of organizations also from Nigeria. So I think I have a good sense of just the cultural dynamics of the country. But one thing that I get from you guys all the time is just how proud you guys are about your culture, your music. It's this, you guys are so authentic about your music, even when it's outside of Nigeria. It's like you can identify the Nigerian sound from anywhere around the world. And then you guys have an interesting way of speaking Pidgin English. Like, you guys are so, you're so filled with pride in yourselves. And I find that so inspiring. Nigeria is one of my favorite countries. I've only been there twice, but it's definitely been one of my most exciting experiences where just the cultural dynamics and the people are concerned. Sure. So you guys are cool people. But you guys also, there are a lot of myths that exist about you guys. And I want to give you a few lists of myths, stereotypes. They might be true, they might be false. And I want to give you an opportunity to debunk them. So you're going to say yes or no. But before I do that, I'm just going to read my mother's comments. I'm always intrigued and interested in Africa pre-colonialism. Those stories give a DNA blueprint to what being African inherently means. I agree with you completely. It's sad that a lot of our stories are not captured by us. So yes, we know about our history because of conversations that we've had that kind of go from generation to generation. But in terms of a history that is noted down by Africans about Africans, we don't have a lot about that. That's why a lot of our things are falsely written or are represented in the eye of somebody else. And I think it's really dangerous because translation is at times quite dangerous because you see things the way that you see them, but it does not necessarily make it as true as it is authentically so. But yeah, I agree with you. And greetings to everyone who has joined us. We are close to the end of our session, but as I had mentioned, Olushola is a male gender-based violence activist. He's based in Nigeria. He's Nigerian from Abuja. Abuja is the capital city, right?
Yes, it is.
So, okay, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that Abuja is a new city.
It's not necessarily a new city. It was, you know, it was moved because it was like the center of Nigeria. So being Lagos was, you know, a center of excellence, they had to move it to a place that was central. So FCT became the best spot because if you look at the map, FCT is in between the whole other 36 states. So
okay,
they moved
it. Okay, I get. Oh, okay. And Lagos used to be the capital city, but it has
Lagos used
the
to
largest
be the capital. Yes.
Okay, I get you. Okay, so I'm giving you a list now. And like I said, we're either going to say yes or no. Nigerians are into fraud.
No. No. So some have been involved in fraud, but no. Uh-huh.
Okay. So Nigerians are not corrupt? Corrupt.
No.
Okay.
Nigerians are corrupt.
Okay. Nigerians are uneducated.
That's a lie. A big one, no. But like...
So that's a false?
False.
Okay, cool. Nigerians are cultured?
Yeah, super. Super cultured. We hold dearly our culture. So yeah.
Okay. Nigerians open-minded?
Not really. Not all Nigerians.
Okay.
To be honest, not really. they tend to be, but they are not. So yes, it's not. Nigerians are not really open-minded to a lot of things. So
yeah. But I think I think the reason why I mentioned this was because I think everywhere in the world you'll find a Nigerian and like a community of Nigerians. So Nigerians are everywhere. So the open-mindedness for me comes from a people who are just, they're so big on exploring the world.
True.
Please say that again. The network is bad.
Oh, goodness. How unfortunate. This wonderful conversation was disturbed by none other than our connectivity. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to continue with the interview, but I think that the first episode was killer. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to interview you as our first interviewee. Definitely gained a lot from our conversation. And highlighting the importance of us coming together as a collective to find solutions to the problems that we face in our communities. And I mean, also identifying the need for us to grow as a people, whether it is in academia, in the work environment, in our cultural and religious dynamics. Change is a necessary and a natural process of growth. And once again, thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to engaging with you again as I tackle important conversations surrounding life in Africa. Hello, World Changers. This is Rethinking Africa with Nonja Blokumede, a podcast series where I'll be interviewing young African youth who are doing remarkable things across the African continent. I'll be capturing authentic African stories and, of course, engaging on important discussions relating to the development of the African continent. So stay tuned, engage, and remember, Africa, your time is now.
So I have brought two wonderful brothers that I had the opportunity of connecting with on my trip to Nigeria last year. Last year I had my first opportunity. So I've never really been someone who has ever been drawn to environmental health until my involvement in a waste management project in Nigeria last year. So it's definitely a topic that, I don't know a lot about. But I'm extremely fascinated by it, especially when I come across young Africans who are, activists, environmental and climate change activists, which is, I believe, a fairly new market that young people are now going into. So these two young brothers, Solomon and Jephtha, they're Nigerian, and they'll be sharing a bit about their project. The work that they've been able to do in their country, in their community. And of course, I'll be uploading this at a later stage. Okay, so I just want to ask this question, right? This overall question, right, that will govern our discussion today. And the question is waste a first world country problem? Do we care about climate, environmental, and the effects? Do we care about climate, environmental health, and the effects of pollution, or have our struggles to make a living and sustain ourselves blinded us from the implications of our actions? So I realized, when I was working on this project with three other young people from Nigeria, I realized that although it is such a huge conversation, although it's such a huge problem, a lot of people are kind of blinded to it. And more often than not, it has been viewed as a first world country problem. So I'm extremely inspired by these brothers, as I said, who will be taking us through their journey today. But before they take us through their journey, I just want to read a few stats. Okay, I want to read a few stats that I found on the net that I find quite interesting. Okay, so the fastest growing regions for waste generation are sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, where it is expected to triple and double respectively by 2050, the World Bank said in a report, right? By then, the regions will be producing 35% of the world's trash. This is sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, 35% of the world's trash. So nearly 20 of the world's 50 biggest dump sites are on the continent, according to Waste Atlas. On top of that, Africa is now a dumping ground from other often developed countries. This is extremely disappointing. Africa is one of the dumping grounds. Jeez, okay. So welcome, Solomon and Jephthah. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we are doing fine, thank you.
Good to have you, thank you. Thank you for taking time aside to have this conversation with me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Nandabu.
Awesome, awesome. So could you guys just take us through your journey? You know, give us perspective on how this idea or this love for the environment come about, share about your background, your educational background, what you're currently doing before we really tap into the work that you are involved in.
All right. My name is Solomon Adelo, and I graduated from the Federal University of Agriculture, Abeokuta, where I studied aquaculture and fisheries management. So after my graduation, I noticed that there's a particular river along the road I used to pass to school that is highly polluted with plastics, and this really fueled my innovative skills about things we can do to protect this aquatic life from such pollution. So that's what embedded
Okay, sorry, Solomon, I lost you a bit at the end. Sorry, please mention your last statement if you can remember.
Having noticed, right, so I said, I noticed plastic pollution is something that is very affecting aquatic life. So that I've been noticing throughout my wondering about what I, as an individual, can do to protect this aquatic life from this pollution. And that is what birthed JED Recycling Initiative.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Jephthah, who's older between you guys?
Okay.
Oh my goodness, I just lost you guys. I lost like a minute of that conversation.
Okay. Shall I come again?
Yes, please.
I said JED Recycling was originally Solomon's idea, okay. But my role in the whole journey was that I helped him refine the idea. So one thing I've always wanted to do, create stuff from waste. So even from when I was very much younger, I love making creative things from even seemingly useless things. So he wanted to stop plastics pollution from killing aquatic organisms. I want to create things, probably arts or something else from plastic. So that was how the synergy worked out together between the two of us. So we were trying to do two things at a time. And that is how JED Recycling started.
Wow, okay.
Back to my background, I studied chemical engineering from Lado Capitola University of Technology, Nigeria.
Okay. So you were the support structure for an idea that Solomon had come up with.
Yes.
Okay. You guys are working, I mean, working very well together. I think sometimes, not even sometimes, I know that my sister is in fashion, and you know, I have a lot of interests in that specific field as well. So it helps to have someone who kind of has the background of it, even though you are interested in a particular field. So with you, Jefta, it's great that you guys are able to balance each other with the passion and the experiences that you have, and with the educational background that Solomon has. So you guys are definitely a functional team and are doing great, impressive work on the continent. Yes. So why waste? I know you've mentioned, Solomon, that you have a background in this particular area, but what even drew you to, you know, your this fascination of water and,
research has shown that oceans are receiving most of at least 8 billion kilograms of plastics that is being produced annually. So we've noticed that this plastic pollution is something that is becoming a great issue when it comes to climate change. Not only that, these plastics are not biodegradable. Unlike other ways in which microorganisms in the soil can easily work on it and make it to be degraded, plastics are not degraded by this microorganism. Hence, when this plastic is being produced, it truly doesn't go away from the environment. It is only buried in landfills. And that is a great issue when it comes to plastic pollution. So I noted that this is becoming an issue, and I really want to help in solving this type of challenge, because I see plastics, aside the fact that it could last longer, it is also efficient. It's an efficient product that can be reused. So I thought of, we could try and make renewable products from these plastics, and that was how I think about Jet Recycling Initiative works.
Okay, that is so fascinating. I know that water is a huge problem in Nigeria. It's something that I kind of had to adjust to, having traveled there twice. I didn't stay there for too long, but it was definitely quite an adjustment, because bottled water in South Africa is not I wouldn't say it's not a common thing, but you won't find bottled water just, you know, at every meal. That was one thing that I found quite fascinating with Nigeria. Bottled water with every single meal. Could you just give us perspective maybe on what is the sanitation problem, or how big is the sanitation, water and sanitation problem in Nigeria? Because I think it has a huge link to obviously pollution.
But it's a big issue. The water bottle that you talked about, yes, it is it's a really big issue, and I can't, although I laugh about it, but it's actually a serious issue. So it boils down to the fact that even though there are many bottled water that Nigerians do take, but we don't have a system that we can use to recycle or to reuse it. And we don't encourage reusing, just like you noticed when you came to Nigeria. And that is where the issue lies. So what we want to do is that we want to encourage people to inculcate the art of reusing. We need to reuse. Mm-hmm. And if we can't reuse, we can recycle. Not that you just throw it out. Because when you throw it out, it does not go... It does not disappear. It goes back to the ocean or back to the soil. And that's where the problem lies. True. It affects all people. It causes erosion, flooding, and the likes. So that is just the ripple effect of what you saw when you came to Nigeria.
I love how you... I love that statement of, you know, it doesn't just go away. It either ends up in the soil or it ends up in the sea. And I'm glad that you're pointing that out, because there is that idea of, you know, you want to be clean, but you want to be clean in this little spot that you reside in. So you don't care if, for example, you're taking a ride and you want to clear out your car. You'll clear it out the window, right? And in your head, the idea is that, okay, I'm clean. My car, I'm clean because my car is clean. But you don't look at the effects of that plastic that you've just thrown out of the window. So it is, I guess, a huge educational point where people need to understand that just because you are clearing your space and throwing something on the soil or in the sea, it doesn't just disappear. It stays there. And there are extremely negative effects of that action.
Yes.
Yeah. So could you guys, you've mentioned a bit about the project that you are involved in. When did it start? What are some of the challenges that you guys have come across? Because, you know, as someone who is extremely passionate about social development, I've been involved in so many different projects in the past 5 years, and I know how challenging it is. Finances, finding the right team, the right organizational structures.
Yes.
How did you guys come up, or what are the challenges that you guys had to, you know, kind of pull through as young people who you know are passionate about this area?
The first problem was I think the structure was a little bit people find it hard to believe our model. So when we first started, I could remember our first outreach. It was only I and Solomon that we both went to that place. We went together, and most of the places we went to, for instance, when we went to the Odonale River for our research, we went there together. So little by little, as we set out, we begin to get people began to believe in our model, and that helped us a lot. So we now started structuring a team. We call out for volunteers. So calling out for volunteers, we saw a lot of people, but you just have to streamline so that we could pick people that are really passionate about these things. So that's how we got a team of 10. So from there, we went to the environment. We also talked to them. We gave them our letters. We gave them dates. Okay, we also went to our community. I think that's another thing that we did. We started from our community. Okay, when we went to the government, the government asked us to start from our immediate community.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we started from our immediate community. We went to the market association, to the landlord that's in our community. So that was how we started. So we started that small, then we started to enlarge our coast. And that was how gender cycling started.
At the initial stage too, we also had the challenge of getting ourselves engaged in the field. So we need to relate with people that are already in the field of recycling. We had to dedicate time to read recycling ebooks, wee books about plastics and how it can be reused and recreated. So we devoted, at least we made it a goal to read at least one ebook per day about recycling. So that was how we were able to acquire the knowledge we need as running this initiative, and we are thanking God it's working well now.
You know, as I mentioned that in my experiences, I've had so many challenges working with different people. You often find that you come up with this great idea and people get so excited, but when it's actually time to work, then people kind of fall back. That's one huge problem that I've found, right? If you are not paying people, then they're just like, oh my gosh, can I really be a part of this? So how important have finances been to you? What I often say is, you know, you start with what you do, what you can with what you have. So with the little you have, try to change your environment. So how important have finances been to you guys in pursuing this initiative?
Okay, actually, so the population project started our work, and it was a huge it had a very positive effect on our project. So through the support that we got from the population project, we're able to build networks, we're able to get materials, we're able to secure our plastic collection site. So on getting this, people began to trust our model. And so that give a lot of people confidence, and people wanted to join. I hope you get that, Nonjabulu. So at that point, we also have to pause a bit, so that we need to separate the passionate from the non-passionate ones, because that's very important too.
That's true.
So in my past project, one mistake I've done is that I tried to put everybody all in one house. Then commotion began to start, and then a lot of problems. I began to solve issues unrelated to the project I was doing. But at this point, I didn't let that mistake itself. So I tried to make sure that, okay, before I can say I call you up, I have a one-on-one conversation with you. Okay, do you know this is what we do? How can you do the support? What are the things you are bringing? No? Does it align with your goals? Can we support you? Can we support each other before I take you into the team? And that was one of the basic metrics for our service project.
Okay. No, I'm definitely that glad that it's working out for you guys. And I know that you guys still have so many dreams ahead. But tapping into that, in the next, let's say, 5 years, how do you guys see yourselves in terms of jade recycling or any other projects you might want to tap into in the future?
In the next 5 years, we hope to expand our coast and widen our initiative to at least 6 geopolitical zones in Nigeria. We also hope to have educated at least thousands of people when it comes to recycling. And we also hope to replicate the model also in South Africa as time goes on.
Yes. We need you guys in South Africa, believe me. So I'm looking forward to that. Yes, you guys must definitely branch into all these different countries. But yeah. How important is awareness in the work that you do? I said this initially that it seems that we are so blinded from the implications of our actions relating to pollution. Some people really don't know. They generally don't know what the effects are. So in the work that you guys do, I'm assuming that you also run projects where, you know, you kind of sensitization projects where, yeah, you bring people into this knowledge that you've acquired about the effects of pollution. How has that experience been? Do people not know, or they just don't care?
Maybe because of the project, there are a lot of people that don't know, let me put it that way. But there are people who knows about the effect, but they don't care because they are not directly affected.
Yeah.
So since they are not directly affected by pollution, some people say, okay, when last the flooding occurred? So they don't really care. They just throw the plastic out and they feel like, well, so far my house is secured, the road I pass to my workplace is secured, so who cares?
Okay.
Awareness is important. So one thing I also found out that some people who are doing the recycling business are doing it for the money.
Okay, sorry, I'm losing you a bit, Jefta. Okay, sorry, I'm losing you completely.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. I think the last thing you mentioned, you were speaking about how people just don't care.
Yes.
Yeah, that part. Okay. I lost you for the rest.
Okay. I said a lot of people just don't care because they are not directly affected. So yeah. One thing is that if they are directly affected, they will have seen the grave consequences of plastic pollution. But since they are not affected, they feel, who cares about this plastic? Let me just throw it out. So that is where awareness comes in. So if people are aware that this thing that we are doing, we have a bad effect on other people.
Yes.
And even generations, then, okay, people will begin to have a rethink about what they do. So, in fact, the bottled water that you talk about is like a status symbol in Nigeria. Just like, you know, you really know it. Like a status symbol. People like to use it a lot. So,
also, creating this awareness, we also giving thought to starting from the elementary level, and that is why we are advocating and creating awareness about environmental education in schools. When we engage these children about what they can also practicalize, what they can really do with plastics, that will get them motivated not only to keep the environment clean, but at the same time, they could see areas in which they could also use these plastics to create something. So we are canvassing for including this environmental education in curriculums in secondary schools and even at the basic schools level too, because that will also help us in creating a generation of eco-conscious individuals and scholars as time goes on.
Okay, thank you so much, guys. So informative, so informative. I wish we had more time. But you know, this week has just been busy for me. But thank you so much. I know I'm equally busy for you guys as well. So thank you for setting time aside, for taking us into your journey. And I, of course, wish you guys all the best in your future endeavors. But before you guys leave, right, I want you to perhaps mention to people out there who will be watching this video at some point or listening to the recording, how can they get involved in what you are currently doing? Let's say, for example, there's someone in Sierra Leone, have a lot of people from Sierra Leone in our organization anyways, but let's say someone from Sierra Leone is extremely fascinated by what you guys do and would like to open, you know, or continue the work in Sierra Leone. Well, what would you like to say to somebody like that or someone who has no idea about the implications of pollution and climate change? How can they get involved in what you do?
Well, ready to help other people to replicate the model, because it's an open model and we can't do the work on our own. We can share the knowledge, we can share the ideas together. Can make sure that, okay, this thing can work in other countries, because a sustainable Nigeria is also the after effect of a sustainable Africa. So if the Sudan is sustainable, South Africa is sustainable, you know, Africa as a whole will be sustainable, and the latter effect will be that the world will be sustainable, and that's where we are going to. So it really chooses me. If I see someone, maybe probably from Sudan, from Kenya, that wants to do what we do, I can just, I'm ready to help that, okay, these are the paths that we follow, these are the mistakes we made,
Okay. Well, I'm hoping that people who watch this will definitely want to get involved in what you do. So just a last comment, how can people get a hold of you, your social media networks, perhaps also your JED Recycling Initiative Networks, how can they connect with you?
On Facebook, we are at JED Recycling Initiative. Then on Instagram also, we are JED_recycling. That's on Instagram. While on Twitter, we are JED Recycling, all together with this space. Then you could also reach out to us through emails at JEDRecycling@gmail.com.
Okay, perfect. So I will attempt to have all those details when I edit this video. Thank you so much. brothers, thank you for setting time aside to have this conversation with me, and I wish you all the best, and I hope to speak to you soon and see you guys in Nigeria again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Namjay.
Thank you so much. Bye bye. Zethembi kuyadabukisa akusifanele njengabantu abamnyama noma siwuthanda.